This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at WorldSweeper.com. We're speaking with Paul Lemon, and Paul is the president of Arrowhead Parking Services. They are a company located in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. They are our April 2012 Contractor of the Month. Welcome, Paul. We appreciate you being involved with the World Sweeper.
Thank you. Thank you for contacting me.
I chose you because you have a lot of interesting things you're doing. You're a Canadian contractor, and that gives us a little look into what the Canadian side of the parking area and street sweeping industry is like. If you would, I know you started in 2002, and then you feel you really got rolling around 2005, so you're a fairly new company. You do a lot of innovative services and sell products in addition to sweeping. So if you would, talk about how you got into the business, maybe, and why, and where you are today. We'll learn a lot about what sweeping is like in Canada on the northeast side. So go ahead, Paul. Please take it away.
Sure. Sure, no problem. Basically, we started in 2002, and I started formed the company more as a consultant company because my background actually deals in law enforcement. So we got into providing signage companies, consulting for municipal bylaws, for signage and stuff like that. So I would contract myself out to various sign companies and go out, tell them where their signs need to be and stuff like that. And that's ultimately the foundation of how the company was started. And then back in around 2005, we decided to take it one step further, and we decided to bring it in-house and start doing a lot of the sign installation. And we started working very closely with a few of the bigger builders and for traffic safety. And just went kind of from there, and it expanded on to all of our additional services that we provide today.
So you found it somewhere along the way that existing clients needed to get their areas cleaned up, their paved areas?
Need to get it cleaned up with the builders. We target a couple different variations. The sector itself is divided into, I'd probably say, three main ones, which are property managers, such as condo living, retail, commercial applications, and the other one would be the new development or the builders, as Toronto seems to have the growth spurt in Toronto for new buildings has been ongoing for probably 5 or 6 years now, so that's kind of what's guided us all along throughout the process.
Well, let's talk about that last one first, the construction cleanup around and sweeping with new construction. What is required in Ontario and in Canada generally and along those lines, and what is done just for cosmetic reasons and to keep work flowing a little faster?
For the new buildings, especially downtown, they have to keep the area itself clean, like the main roadways and everything has to be nice and stuff like that. So
do they not want to see track out, for example, dirt track out coming out of a construction
correct.
Site? Okay.
So they got big underhold. They're probably about 10, 20 stories underground, right? So all that dirt over the winter or during a rainy season, it's just being tracked out through the main road. So companies need to come in or they do it themselves and just keep all the dirt right off the main roads.
Yeah, it makes sense. So that's something that is not necessarily mandated that you have to be on site during a construction, but it's...
There's no law. It's mostly just for the builder and stuff like that.
Okay. And then in terms of the condo folks, what are they having done? They're sweeping around the condos, they're sweeping their parking areas. How often?
Absolutely, yeah, because in condo living, you pay a maintenance fee. So if you're paying the maintenance fee, then they expect that work to be done, and the building has to be maintained to an acceptable level. So where we come in is either sweeping around the property, or a lot of it is, because they're all underground parking garages, is we go in and pressure wash them as well.
So we haven't talked about the other things you do besides sweeping, but pressure washing is, I know, a major part of your business.
Yeah, that's correct. It's a huge component for that for that aspect of the property managers it is.
And we talked a little bit before we recorded here about the retail sector, and it really varies quite a lot compared to the United States marketplace, as an example. The U.S. has a very well-developed parking area sweeping history now, and the question is not if we should sweep as much as how often we should sweep, and that's usually, in most retail sectors, how many days a week. Talk about that, how that differs from your Ontario market, which we would think would tend to be a lot heavier, more debris, and could be dirtier, just like our northeast section of the United States.
And that's what we had thought when we first entered that section of it as well, is like your image is everything in commercial. And I know the U.S. does do a lot of the parking lot sweeping in the back of the half tons for litter pickup and stuff like that. So that's what our approach was as well. But in Canada itself, or maybe not all of Canada, but in Ontario specifically, it's not really here. And I don't know why. We tried to get into that market, push it a little bit more, because people want the image, but they just seems that the money is not there, or there's no law that forces them to clean it up, or there's no bylaws in place or anyone to enforce it. So it might be that perspective on itself. I don't know. So the difference between the U.S. and Canada right now for that is the U.S. will run the truck sweepers, and here in Canada, you get the little guy going out with the broom and the dustpan, and he just goes around the parking lot and picks up litter. So we have tried to open that market up and explain the difference and the rationale behind using a truck sweeper. Just is for appearance, time, everything. But the retail people or the retail plazas here, property managers that run them, just don't feel that it's that big of an importance yet.
And so what they're doing is they're having you clean up once a year to get all the snow abatement material off.
You got it.
And, yeah. And that's
so after all the snow has been piled up for the year, then the majority of it is, I'd say for probably 2 to 3 months, is the busy season after snow, and then that's it. They clean up after the snow, and they don't do it again until the following year.
So maybe that's, I'm trying to think here why the difference would be. In the United States, there's not a mandated parking lot cleanup. It's pretty much done for cosmetic reasons as well. So I'm trying to think of what the difference might be. And the thing that strikes me initially is that we have a very litigious climate here where everybody's ready to sue on the drop of a hat. And I wonder if they don't have as much slip and fall suits maybe there. And people aren't as worried. I mean, cosmetics, they say, well, I'd like to have it cleaner so it'll be cosmetically clean because I have, you know, my night shift go out there with, with a broom and a dustpan, so to speak. But we know that there's a buildup coming off tires and so forth of, you know, let's call them ball bearings. They're, sand and dirt that will roll up. Are people very suit happy there?
Well, they do because everything that the U.S. does eventually impacts us here in Canada. And, yeah, I've noticed over the past 5-6 years, especially in the condo side of it, there's a lot more slip and fall related lawsuits. But for commercial, it almost seems like as long as you have a body out there, that seems to be the attitude where we're covering ourselves. We actually have someone out doing the job. Doesn't matter how good it is, they're there in body. I'm not saying that may be the case. I guess that's speaking for myself, but
well, let's talk a little bit about how you might market around that, because the idea here is to help contractors that are listening overcome the same kinds of conversations that they're having in their marketplace as well. One of the things that happens when you have somebody out picking stuff up by hand is that you're going to lose some amount of food material that just isn't, it's going to crumble up and just going to sit there. So you can attract rodent problem, an animal problem, depending on how much of that stuff is out there, how long it's left, and so forth. The ball bearing situation, that is another one. You know, when you have small micron debris or sand, and it gets hit by tires and rolled, it becomes ball bearings. And so that's another cell that you can talk to your customers about. And of course, striping must not last very long with as much snow and so forth as you have there. Striping and seal coating will last a lot longer if you don't have a lot of material being rubbed on it.
Well, that's just it, and we've tried to educate them. Education seems to be one of our key points, is we try to educate our clients on, like, the breakdown of pavement and that, if it's not cleaned properly and everything else like that. But there seems to be a difference, I'm not sure if it's opinions, but generations, where the younger generation coming up the ranks seems to have the newer and innovative ideas, and they seem to be willing to take it on. I'm not sure if, like, the truck sweeping, for example, or the parking lot cleaning, I'm dealing with the much older managers and that, and they kind of, some of them, not all of them, but some of them do have the attitude, well, it's not broke, we're not going to fix it kind of scenario.
Certainly not going to spend money to fix it.
Exactly. So, and that seems to be one of our, not major hurdles, but it is an obstacle that we do run into quite frequent.
Sure. And what do you use for sweeping?
We have the Schwartz parking lot sweeper.
348, 347.
It is the 348 on.
Yeah. So you're able to do construction sweeping with that as well.
Correct.
Twin engine heavy duty parking lot sweeper, and you can do some, even though the intake's on the wrong side of the head to do street sweeping, you would be able to do some of that around condos and those kinds of things.
Yep.
Where it doesn't
That's
really
correct. And we turn it around and go the opposite way, right?
That's it. That's what you do. You do what you need to do.
The reason we brought that into the Canada, I think we brought it in, I can't remember, a number of years ago now, but we were one of the first ones to bring that. And we were looking, we had a lot of clients that we met with that wanted, like, to get rid of all the fine dust and particles and little pebbles. And the traditional street sweeper wasn't able to do that with the rotary brooms. They would just throw it around. So when we went looking for one, this is what we actually came up with that we thought was the best fit. And at the time, it was.
Well, and if you're comparing it to a broom sweeper, that sure will make a difference, because you do cut the dust. You get a lot more of the small micron, the bell bearings off the road.
And if you look, a lot of the cities now or municipalities around here in Toronto, they actually have switched over to a lot of these trucks, not the Schwartz one, but the
Timco.
I believe.
They were the winners in a kind of a contested but still valid Toronto sweeper study, and I think that they probably ended up primarily with Timco units as a result. No matter which of the top quality air sweepers they might have chosen, in my editorial opinion, it's much better to sweep with an air sweeper than it is with a broom sweeper if you can, and small micron debris, or in the U.S. what we would call complying with the NPDES requirements, is a factor, then if you can get an air sweeper into the mix. Of course, people like broom sweepers, or operators especially, because if it's a muffler or something like that, they can't pick it up in their air sweeper, and, there's safety issues, you have to go around,
absolutely.
all that, so.
Yeah. No, there's been times I wish I've had both, you know what I mean, like, I wish I could put the broom on the, and I know you can put the broom on the 348, but I wish we had a rotary broom at some time for doing our construction cleanup, where it's all wet and mud and stuff like that, because the air sweeper just won't pick that up.
Right, and it is it does make a big difference, and a rotary broom will make somewhat of a difference, and they have some broom and head machines. I don't believe that the 340 series has that. I think the larger street sweepers, as I recall, have their broom and head. But even then, then you have a broom that you never see, and you don't know whether it has twine wrapped all around it.
No,
those
absolutely.
Kinds of things. So it's always great to have a small broom sweeper, especially, well, like a Challenger, for example. That's a small machine that I know is built in Canada, so I'll give them a plug. You have another smaller sweeper. Let's talk about that. I'll be able to put a photo of that with our article, and I encourage people. You call it a mini sweeper, and it is.
I do.
Yeah.
Yep, there's not too, well, it's the only one that's ever been made in Canada, and it was actually it's been made in the U.S. Basically, I hired a California company to oversee the work, and all the work was actually done in Florida. And I individually bought all the parts throughout the U.S. and had it all put together. One of the main reasons I did is for underground pressure washing. I've noticed in my industry, and I think it's a lot of people can agree with it, is you have to think of products or services outside of the box. And this was one of the products that I developed. And the reason we did is when we got into pressure washing probably about 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago, we started off with, like everybody else, using the brooms, the rotary brooms on cement. But what we found was the rotary brooms on cement will cause dust. That dust goes up and it goes into the pipes. So me having the big road sweeper here, the parking lot sweeper, I said that there's got to be a way to get that big, the big one in the underground, so it just acts like a big vacuum cleaner and will still get all the dirt and prevent all the particles and fine dust from going down the drains. And when I went searching on the market, there was actually nothing available. So I came, just started digging, doing my own research, and this is what we came up with. It's a prototype.
Talk about what that is for those who are listening to this and are not, you know, looking at a picture. What is the chassis and what is the capacity of the sweeper and so forth?
The chassis, it's a little Daihatsu Japanese mini truck, and it stands about 6 feet tall. And the reason we got it at that height is so we can get into any underground parking garage or a car park that there is without damaging anything. And the sweeper components are just your Collier engines, same design as the air sweepers. Now, this hopper doesn't lift as opposed to the other truck one. It could, but again, it was a lot of extra money to have that built in, and we'd have to reinforce the chassis. We already had to reinforce it to extra springs for the weight load and stuff like that. So for it being the first prototype and not knowing if it would actually do the trick, we decided to keep costs down as low as we could anyways.
You talk about on your website it's 6 feet tall and 5 feet wide. But before people get too excited about this in the U.S., and it does look like a very usable option as a small sweeper, the Daihatsu chassis that it's on is not marketed in the U.S. as far as I know, or available
no.
or drivable. So that's
no.
one of
there is another chassis that would be in for the U.S., but the difference, and this is what we're, I guess Canada might be at a little bit difference, is those trucks or that chassis itself is not able to be driven on the road in the U.S. They're not road legal, right?
Right.
Whereas in Canada, I actually can drive that on the road.
And do you know if that's a safety issue, a crash test issue, that it's not drivable?
Honestly,
I
don't know. I actually don't know why. The thing does a speed limit. I'm not really sure. To be
sure.
Quite
yeah, that's fine. Do you find that that's an efficient unit? Do you use it in your underground operations all the time?
Well, it's funny because we'll run both of them. We'll run the big one and the little one. The little one was such, it met our expectations and exceeded that we actually run the two of them side by side. And it's quite funny if you look at it at nighttime, you see the big one going down the curb aisles and the little one going behind it, picking up what the broom and everything and the air sweeper can't get.
Right.
So it's almost like a little a baby elephant and a big mother elephant.
Uh-huh.
The little elephant's hanging on to the tail of Big Mama kind of thing, right?
Yeah, the image that I was getting was astonishingly from my childhood of a book I had. I think it was called Scuffy the Tugboat, where it was a little tugboat who could.
Exactly.
It gives you that feel to it.
It does. And you know what? When we brought it out, we didn't know what the expectations were. We had it put together, didn't know if it were work, because we cut the hopper down, right? So once you cut the hopper down, it affects the baffles and the air intake and everything else. So we weren't sure how that was going to affect everything. But lo and behold, it worked out wonderfully for us. And then when we got it back here, we actually tried to put it into parking lot sweeping at night. So instead of running our big road one, we'd run the little one at nighttime. That thing picks up pizza boxes. Anything that can fit up those baffles, it'll take it.
It's got to be less expensive to run. Do you have any idea what the cost per hour differential might be?
Canadian-wise, I wouldn't even know. The big one is probably about 70, 50, 60 bucks an hour, and the little one is, I think in an eight-hour shift, you might burn 15 bucks of gas, if that.
So there's quite a differential in terms of cost.
Oh, it's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I have to haul that one, the advantages of this is if I have to haul it any distance, we have a tow bar to throw in the front of it, and we tow under half ton.
That's not the only thing you tow either. Maybe that's our segue to get into another aspect of your business. You talked about you have an enforcement end of things that's active in the winter when it's very snowy, probably.
That's
when you're not sweeping.
Yeah.
Talk about that. That's an interesting. I don't think that I've heard that particular segment of business for a contractor to get into for his winter.
No. So for the last couple of years, we've been doing fairly well with our new construction during the winter season, where we've done a lot of photoluminescent exit signs and stuff, but they seem to die out over the last year. And with my background being in law enforcement, I've always had lots of clients approach me saying, when are you going to get back into parking enforcement? Well, the current system that we have here in Toronto, I didn't felt worked. So I didn't want to be another contractor who just decided to issue tickets or citations, and that there's no real possible scenario to fix the problem. And we have a growing infrastructure here that's getting a little bit out of hand. So what I decided to do was start researching on other alternatives, again, outside the box. And what I found or came up with was we developed some software, some condo portals, and we run it with license plate technology and using that in conjunction with a vehicle immobilizer. Now, we're not the first company here in Canada to use a vehicle immobilizer, but we are the first ones here in Toronto to use it. And we are actually the first ones in Canada to run all the hardware and software as a private organization.
You're making an investment in infrastructure, and then essentially you have a contract that says if your license plate recognition system sees any of these crimes on the books, whether it's parking, a number of parking tickets, or that it's owned by a felon or whatever that's wanted, you have the ability then to immobilize the car. Is that how that works?
That's right. So instead, right now, like I've worked, because I've worked on it before, if we ever came across a stolen vehicle, we'd have to sit on that vehicle until the police showed up or someone showed up to relieve us from that vehicle. Now I have the ability, if I can identify a stolen vehicle, I can just put the vehicle immobilizer on it, or known as the boot, and then we can go. And that vehicle is not going to go anywhere until the police show up. So it's allocation of resources, too. So I'm not tying up one officer for a whole night waiting for a tow truck to show up to take the vehicle, right?
Is that then on your sweeper, or is it on other vehicles, or how does that part work?
Are you out cruising? On other vehicles.
You're out cruising with vehicles that are constantly on the move?
That's right. So we can do both. We actually have a stationary, it's called license plate recognition, and we have both. We have a stationary one, or a fixed, I guess, and then we have a mobile one as well.
So the fixed is you install that at a location that gets lots of traffic?
Yes. So let's say if you have a parking garage or something, or a car park area, and just for recording purposes, then we can just fix a stationary LPR system, and it'll take pictures of all the cars and license plate to come in and out of the property.
And is that movable? You say it's fixed, but it's a trailer?
Yes,
or
it is movable.
Yeah. So you put it someplace. I'm thinking of those trailers that say your speed is this, it should be this. It's kind of like that. You can move it around.
And it also has that ability as well, yeah.
And then you must get paid for the leads you get, or the immobilization you get, or something like that?
That's correct.
I don't want
to
delve into your contract.
We charge a minimum software fee for the management company, and that's where the difference is. The current system now is you would charge per visit or per how many times you come to the property. Well, I've rewrote that whole thing, and I don't charge for that. I charge just a monthly fee to use our cloud technology, and then we, our enforcement or our patrols, I guess you could say, they're absolutely free because we charge the end violator.
Oh,
I see. As opposed to the property manager.
Okay. So they are happy with having the equipment on their property then.
And it works. Mm-hmm. Booting's always been, and as I said, this is the U.S., it's always been the most effective deterrent for illegally parking or other stuff, right? So, or for collection of fines. It's just, it never really made it here.
Mm-hmm.
But as
okay.
I said,
well,
we're the first ones, and we are making it. We set the standards high, and it's not because we want to be known as your typical fly-by-night company where we're just here to make money. We've sunk thousands of dollars into the software for accountability reasons. We run dashboard cameras. So we've thought of it all anyways when it comes to accountability, safety, and being on top of the ball with it.
Well, that helps you in all the other aspects of your business, or at least
it does, because now I can actually say we are a full-blown parking management company right from the ground up.
And some of the other things you do, you have a variety of other services that you provide in that regard, traffic control, signage, you put back up, things like bollard covers and site furnishings, benches, and those types of things. How have you found that to be adding it in as a service offering?
Over the years, all I've done is really, honestly, is listen to our clients and what they want. And this is from, everybody is coming around to, they want to deal with one person. They don't want to deal with one person who deals with four other people. They just want to deal with that one person, whether it be customer service issues or just accountability. They only want the one person. So what I found in my market anyways is that's all they want to deal with. So if I can find it for them or it relates to our business, then I'm happy to oblige them with that. The other example would be on the pressure washing would be catch basins. So we do actual catch basin maintenance as well. And we have our own equipment for that. We don't subcontract anything out.
You sell the products then that we talked about out to your customers. Do you sell them also on a retail level or?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah. So we can have distributors or we can have the retail, the end user, right?
Mm-hmm. Normally we hear things like graffiti removal and large object removal and pressure washing, things that you do, of course, added in with sweeping. But here you've approached this from, it's always interesting to see where people come from, and that's why I wanted you to talk about mm-hmm. that. Coming from a law enforcement background, then you approach this differently than someone coming from virtually any other spot would.
And that's just what it is. Like, and when I first got into the business, I tried to tell our clients, I'm not a sign maker. Like, we make a lot of our own signs now, but I don't have a vested interest in the signs, right? Or at the time. What we recommend to you is really what you need, whereas sign companies may be in a position where that's all they do is sell the signs. So it's their objective to just sell signs and to sell as many to the client as they need. For my job was to interpret the bylaw and to tell the client that you need X amount of signs to fit the requirement for the bylaw. So that's the approach that we kind of took at that as we started going. And a lot of clients bounce back and really appreciate that.
You bet, because that keeps them safe and speaks to their liability and keeping their liability down. That's a
Absolutely.
Very big point.
That's what our goal is to do, whether it be the new construction, especially a new construction. And we talked about the lawsuits here a little bit earlier. My job with my background and for the new builders is to eliminate that liability for them. So if I recommend something that I see that they don't see, then I'm doing it in their best favor as well. That's what they hire me to do, is to reduce or limit the liability. So if anyone does slip and fall or we have an accident, then when we look at it from an investigative purpose, is there stuff there to properly warn someone about?
Mm-hmm. And so, it's sure better to have that in place before the accident happens.
Yes.
How do you identify the things that need to be done? You know, you're on the property somehow. It's you, it's your employees, it's the sweeper operator. Who's trained to be able to look at a property and check it out kind of in all these areas?
It's a combination of everybody that I have on my team, but for the most part, it does come back to me. And it's like I take it my responsibility to make sure that the client is happy or safe or anything else like that. And then it's my job for my employees to make sure that things stay the way they're supposed to and not cut the corners or stuff like that.
Yeah, they're the only one. If somebody knocks down a sign and then because they don't want to get caught, they cart it away with them so nobody
that's
will
right.
notice, then, you know, your guy that's on the property fairly often is going to have a better chance of seeing that that's gone than somebody else might.
They're the front eyes of the business, right? I'm only as good as my employees can make me. I can build the company to whatever level I want, but if I don't have my help looking after me as well and after the client, then no one's going to succeed.
That's very clear, and it's absolutely true. There's no question. I know that there's not a prevailing wage in Canada like there is here. What would you say your average kind of wages are? I don't want you to say here's what I get for sweeping this or this much roadway or something like that. I'm not looking for trade secrets here, but on average, what's a sweeper operator going to make in terms of a range? Would you say with and without benefits? I know you have a minimum wage, but there are no situations where unions have negotiated a special wage that has to be paid just for those jobs, as I understand.
No, and there's not. Maybe there should be in the future. I don't know. If it goes that route, then it goes that route. I've done both. With pressure washing, sweeping, you name it, we've tried it all over the years, and we've tried to bring people in for a minimum wage. That doesn't work. We've tried to bring people in for incentives. It doesn't really work. They're only here to collect a paycheck or fill in for school, a summer job before they go back to university, college, whatever the case may be. I've been lucky. A lot of my employees have been with me for over 5 years, and the only way that I've been able to keep them is you have to pay a little more to help to keep them. I think the minimum wage is $10, whatever the case may be. If you go to the city and drive a sweeper truck, I think you're looking at minimum wage for $30, $35, $38 an hour. So because we're a private company, obviously we don't have the ability to charge that much for the client because everyone shops around, but I still have to find that happy-go medium place between myself, my clients, and my guys. So, yeah, I pay a little bit more in wage, but in return, they do protect me, they do a good job, and that's all that matters, because they do a good job, we get the contract back again.
Well, and you're staying on the high side of the road in all respects, and I think, you know, it's probably more profitable, and which is good for you. It's no doubt more safe and more professional for your clients, which is good for them. Your employees make a little more, which makes them want to do a better job, and it's good for them. And it strikes me that that's one way of doing business, whereas another way is to just really pay minimums and try to really undercut the marketplace and so forth.
That's right. And here's what we have to remember with that, is nobody will really talk about whether you do a good job or not. The first time you have an accident or you do a bad job, everybody knows about it.
That's ever so true.
So for a corporate image, my image is more important to me to pay a little more than have that bad reputation of the lower standard paying and just get a rush job done. This is what you paid for, this is what you get kind of type deal.
Mm-hmm. You can never defend that if the push comes to shove.
Absolutely not.
What's the insurance liability situation in Canada? What's standard and what's the high end if you're on somebody's retail operation, say, or a construction site? What do they want to see? What's the minimum they might want to see in terms of an umbrella, and what's the max?
It differs by company, we've noticed. But for us, we carry a $2 million liability. And I guess the other thing for insurance companies, it really depends on what type of parking lot in or type business you're doing. We also do line painting, which we're starting to get out of, but I've noticed my policy or my insurance seems to be a bit higher when we did the line painting just because of the risk of overspray from the line painter or the wind. So for painting vehicles, they seem to classify that just a little bit higher.
So that's something that somebody could check into if you're thinking about getting into another business, a side business to your standard parking lot sweeping business. Talk to your insurance company, and especially if you were deciding, let's say, between putting up signs and fixing them and putting in parking bumpers and doing line striping, and you don't really know which one you want to get into next, maybe the thing to do is talk to your insurance company and then look around to see which of your current employees might have an ability in one of those areas.
Yeah, oh, that's just it. A couple of years ago, there was a rash of people who went out and bought line stripers, and it seemed to be a cutthroat industry here during the summer for parking lot line striping. And some of the jobs that were done were just atrocious. Line painting itself, since I don't let any of my employees do it because it's taken me probably better half of 6 years just to try to get it down to a science. But it is very hard to do, and if you don't have any clue how to do it. But again, if it's like everything that we do or we provide, if it was easy, if it was easy all the time, everybody would do it. And unfortunately, we know that's just not the case.
That's certainly a good sentiment to put in there, because when you are learning these new things, then sometimes you can feel overwhelmed, but you have to keep in mind what's there at the end of the day for you.
Well, that's just right. And when I brought my first line painter home, I bought it, I think, on the other side of Buffalo, and brought it home back that same night and went to work with it the exact same night. And by morning, I had a builder calling me up probably 7 in the morning, just screaming at me. Again, it's one of those things where, oh, yeah, line painting, that's not a problem, I can do it. Well, geez, did I learn the hard way. Cost me probably twice the amount just to have the job done, because I had to have someone come in and do it.
And maybe take off some old lines.
Exactly.
So. Well, that's part of knowing, you know, what the regulations are and so forth. I mean, with sweeping, it's easier in a sense because you're not putting paint on the ground that has to come up if you put it down in the wrong place. So that's an area where you don't run into the same kinds of problems.
Well, no, and that's just it. But there might be another difference between the Canadian and the U.S. But in our sweeping, when we do this, I have to actually, I send two guys out, two manual laborers out with the sweeper to use backpack blowers to blow out the corners. Now, whether that's because the sweeping is only done once a year or once a season, I don't know, but everyone seems to want all the corners blown out and the image of the property brought up, so I have to send two laborers out with the truck at all times.
They usually have one laborer, or, I mean, if there's a split, there's certainly two philosophies. One says have the sweeper operator jump out and do the backpack, and the other one is let's have a backpack blower with the operator. There's certainly safety issues that are addressed with having at least two people on a truck. But not, now you're saying, do you have two backpack blowers?
Yeah, because, again, like we have so many properties to do in a night, because this only goes on. And that might be the difference.
Right. It is. That would be a difference. Sure. You only have a small window to get it clean.
That's right.
The snow
so
melted.
We're pushing it harder every night, right?
That makes perfect sense.
And again, for safety purposes, I probably would never run a one-man sweeper crew. They're big equipment, right? Like, I grew up on a farm. I've been around machinery all my life. And once you get tired and late at night, you get a little bit more lazier, so you get something jammed in the air sweeper, the intakes, and you get underneath it or something, and you know, it just, it's better to always have two people. One of the most important things that we've noticed, or as we continue to grow, is having the right equipment for the job. And what I mean by that is having the parking lot sweeper to be able to go out and have the ability to do the harder, heavier debris for pickup, or, like, for example, our pressure washers. We run 10 gallon a minute pressure washers on 30 horsepower motors. So we're not just walking in telling the client that we're going to offer the same job as a backyard pressure washer will. This is the equipment that we run. And the reason I do that is I do a lot of research where I try to find the most suitable equipment that's less impact on my employees, so my employees will do the better job, or I try to provide them with all the key elements that they can to give them that job, that of not perfection, but to do a good job. So that's what I found during the course of it, as we continue to grow, is one of the most important things is to have the right equipment for the job.
Yeah, very good point. One area, Paul, that I think people would be interested in learning, if you could give us a clue, is the amount of taxes, unemployment comp, retirement, whatever it is that you have to pay in on your employees. Talk about what that might be, let's say, on an employee that you pay $15 an hour, just as a number out of the air, or 20, whatever you want to make it.
We actually, as a private organization or private company, we don't have benefits. So it's something that, as we grow and get bigger, I will examine, but then I have to pay more for it and everything else. So currently, if I'm looking at, if we're using $15 an hour for typical pay grade, then I think the end result for the employee, it probably ends up costing me, I'm going to say roughly $23 to $25 an hour that I got to pay out for taxes and stuff like that as well.
So what we're talking about is not insurance and those kind of benefits, but the government kind of benefits.
That's right.
That you have to pay.
It's like the government wants their money one way or another.
Well, that's an area that I'd say where America and the United States is pretty similar in, huh?
Pretty much straight down the board with that one, right? They want their money.
Well, what else should we talk about? We've really covered all the bases, I think. Is there anything that you would leave the listeners with? And I'll say straight out what I am left with doing this interview with you. I knew of you. We've spoken before now and so forth, so I knew a little bit. But I know a lot more. And what I'm left with is that you are really taking the high road in terms of safety and doing things right, making sure your property owners are doing things correctly, or at least know how to, they should be doing things correctly if they are interested in doing that. And then you're trying to facilitate that to happen for them. Does that seem accurate?
Pretty much right on the ball. If you looked at our client base, or you walk around and talk to some of our clients right now, they will tell you, no, we're not the cheapest contractor, but we're not the most expensive either. So I have, and it's an industry itself, is we have a lot of people who try to undercut us or try to take a lot of shortcuts. So what we try to do is just kind of stay in the middle, try to find a price bracket we're happy with, but we try to deliver in the service so they don't have to worry about it. Because people, parking itself, people don't want to deal with it. A lot of them don't know how to deal with it, so they don't want the problems that are associated with it. So that's our job as a contractor, to come in and kind of do our job, do it right, and then leave. And then they're happy, we're happy, everyone gets paid, and the day goes on, right?
Well, and I think you can do that at any price point. That's the thing. Although what you lose is the you're happy and they're happy part.
That's there, a lot of it. And there, our success is built on the relationships that we encounter.
Yeah, and you're much able to weather the storm of we need another contractor providing all of these services, and because some of your services are unusual. The other part that would be quite different from the U.S. marketplace is how do you keep your customer happy for a year? Because, to reinforce folks listening, Paul is saying that in their market in the greater Toronto area, in terms of parking lot sweeping, they're not, by and large, customers are not willing to pay for, let's say, mall retail sweeping more than a major cleanup at the end of the snow season, and then you've got to still have that customer around. So it strikes me that you're a good guy to listen to in terms of other services because you have to have them.
And it comes with challenges, especially in the property management side. We lose property managers daily. They're changing companies. They go on to other buildings. So it is difficult for us in that sense. But, again, when we are there, you have to do the job, and you have to do a good job in order for these guys to remember you.
And then, you know, follow up throughout the year, and if you have other types of services you're providing for them, that certainly must.
That's right, and a lot of our clientele, or a lot of our, we've been able. I've considered myself quite lucky to be able to get into some of the bigger builders and stuff of Canada. But all that is based on word. It's your word in this business that drives you, rather than spending thousands of dollars on marketing. Marketing helps. I've done it. I've tried it, but I get more return customers from word of mouth than anything. That's why we take the precautions, we pay a little more, we try to do everything as a company to drive our excellence up a bit.
I can't think of a better place to leave it then. We've been speaking with Paul Lemon. Paul is the president of Arrowhead Parking Services, and they're located in Greater Toronto, Canada. They are World Sweepers April 2012. Featured contractor. That's an honor that only goes out to 12 contractors a year, Paul, so congratulations, and congratulations, too, on the job you're doing. Clearly, it's a top-line job, and it makes me want to be a customer.
Appreciate it. Thank you.